Welcome to Divine Intervention. This is a podcast looking at the very finest and some of the best value South African wines with me, Chio Fraser, and our food and wine guru, Michael Olivier. Sit back, enjoy, and if you've seen what the bottle is, buy one and taste it with us. Welcome back to Divine Intervention. These are a series of podcasts that we've decided to do to highlight some of the finest and some of the best value South African wines and sherries and ports and whiskies and bubblies and all sorts of stuff. Over the coming months, we hope to try a variety of some of the best products from the vineyards of the Cape. And down in the vineyards of the Cape, we have our food and wine guru, celebrity chef, TV chef, author, former restaurateur, and, of course, the host of a very, very impressive food and wine website, Michael Olivier. Michael, good evening and welcome.
John, thank you. Lovely being with you again.
Well, thanks for joining us again. Are you having fun with these podcasts?
Oh, huge fun. Really nice sort of tasting wine with people and hearing their thoughts on the wines, too.
Well, we've had one red so far in the series, a very good value red wine from Douglas Green. This evening, we're going for something a little more pricey, but still reasonably affordable. Before we introduce the wine, I must introduce our two guests in our Joburg studio. First of all, we have public speaker, public nuisance, some would say, David Bullard. David, good evening.
Thank you, John. Lovely to be here again.
Well, it's good to have you still in Gauteng, because as we chatted last week, you're soon to move down to the Cape.
Yes, there are attractions down there, though.
I can imagine. No. I won't say I envy you, I'll just say I hate you.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Also with me in the studio, we have not only our technical engineer who's helping us with the nerdy side of the podcasts, but also somebody who is himself a good fan of good food and wine, Malcolm McDonald from Tursos. Malcolm, good evening and welcome.
Well, thank you very much for that lovely introduction, John.
And we chose a red wine specially for you. I hope you enjoy it this evening. Okay, Michael, it's a wine from Lundskroon. It's a 2011 Shiraz. Why are we tasting this?
Well, first of all, because I think it's a jolly, really nice glass of wine. What they've done here is they've allowed the wine to spend a year in second and third fill American oak. What American oak does is it has a higher natural vanillin content.
We're talking about barrels now.
We're talking about barrels. I am sorry. It gives a nice sort of vanilla. Sweetness is maybe the wrong word, because it's not sweet as in sugar sweet, but that nice sort of vanilla sweetness to the wine. And the sort of smoky, dark berry of the Shiraz, it really, I think the whole thing works together enormously well. It's sort of slightly, not quite a full-bodied wine, but sort of like medium plus, if we could use that. And what I like about it is, using the American oak, you also got that lovely undertow of the sort of oak spices, the sort of the cinnamon and the little bit of clove going on there as well. I think this is a wine that you want to drink with food. Even if that food happens to be a bit of biltong or a cheese pastry or something like that that you're nibbling while you're drinking it. But it's the sort of wine that I would want to take to a dinner table where we've maybe made a casserole with something like a sort of oxtail that's got that lovely sort of gelatinous quality to the sauce.
I agree with you on that, Michael. Am I right in thinking that this might improve a little bit more if we left it a bit longer? 2011 is a bit young.
It is a bit young. I think they on the estate will tell you sort of 6-ish years if you lay it down somewhere nice and cool. But absolutely, certainly, it will get better. So 2 years is a bit young, but it's quite accessible.
And, of course, the Australians are well known for Shiraz, and, of course, in the south of France, they have many very fine wines made from the Shiraz grape.
Yeah.
How are we doing in South Africa?
I think we're doing well. I think it's a very popular wine. Quite often, people will say, oh, just drink a Shiraz with it, simply because a Shiraz, I think, is one of those sort of all-accepting wines. It's great with pork, it's fabulous with lamb, it's good with beef. And, you know, take a bottle like this and pop it in the fridge and chill it down for a little bit. You know, barbecued chicken maybe with some spicy marinade could just be delicious.
Well, I must say, despite my remarks about the prospect for improvement, I agree with you entirely, Michael. I'm not sure I'd want to drink this on its own, but I'm confident that I would enjoy it with food. But what do I know? David Bullard.
It was very interesting. I went a long while ago to the Barossa Valley in Australia, and they were making wines, Shiraz particularly, of very high alcohol, 14.5, 15, even higher. I think the trend has come down a little bit on that, because I think sometimes they were a little bit overbearing. But you can never really mistake a good Shiraz, I don't think, because it does, you know, on the nose, it's like nothing else. I get on this one here, if I nose it gently, salami, a sort of saltiness, Michael. I don't, you know,
yeah, sort of savoury, savoury, meaty.
Obviously kind. The smokiness there as well, but then sort of all sorts of other flavours as well. Gorgeous colour, dark sort of, I suppose you'd call it garnet, I suppose. Or beautiful, beautiful wine to look at. And then on the palate, lots of flavours. I think John's right, you know, we are drinking it a little young, although say definitely the winemakers are quite keen to get the wine out of the cellar on the shelf and get the money in, and one can understand that. But I think if you've got some a reasonably good place to store this, and those wine fridges are not a bad idea, 5 or 6 years you'll be well rewarded. But wonderful wine, and totally agree, it's got to go with something, you know, a good oxtail casserole or something like that. It definitely is a wine that that needs food.
Well, I'm sorry about this, David. If you're getting salami, we will have to serve it to you in a glass next time, not ask you to lick it off a plate. Malcolm, are you enjoying this?
Well, when I picked this up sort of put my nose to it, I sort of said, good grief, that is Shiraz, isn't it? And I'm now, with the cold weather we've been having, just ready to go out, take this with, and go and find one of those casseroles we've been talking about.
And Michael Lundskron, it's a name that rings a bell with me. Tell me what you can about the estate.
Well, it's the de Villiers family. You know, they came here, the antecedents came here in 1689 from La Rochelle in France as French Huguenots. The de Villiers who have been on Lundskron have been there since sort of halfway through the 1800s. And the winemaking has passed down from father to son. Paul de Villiers, who's the current winemaker, was the Diners Club winemaker of the year for his port in 2000. It's a beautiful farm. It's on the sort of west-facing slope of the Pau Mountain, looking out towards Table Mountain. And they are just seriously lovely people.
And what else do they do? And we're trying their Shiraz. Anything else that would recommend?
Anything. I mean, port is obviously their thing. They make really, really seriously good port. Then they've got a range of wines called Paul de Villiers, which is a Cabernet, and then a sort of flagship, the Reserve, which is a Shiraz Merlot with a little bit of Cabernet and Tariqa blend. And then they've got just their standard range, and it's literally anything from dry Chenin Blanc, off-dry Chenin Blanc, Sauvignon Blanc, and there's some lovely sort of entry-level wines there, Paul Hugo White, Paul Hugo Red, and then they've got a little range called Bush Camp, which is quite fun.
David, you're moving down to the vineyards, as I said. Any hints, apart from the fact that you get a designated driver, for somebody who wants to go out on a day exploring some of the estates? How much research should you do in advance? Should you call up to ask for a cellar tasting, or should you just meander down the road and hope for the best?
You know, I don't think you have to hope for the best when you meander down the road through any of the wine trails in the Western Cape. So much money has been spent by the estate owners to make it an attractive proposition for a day visitor or someone buying wine that it's very difficult, I think, these days to find a wine farm that is not very welcoming and that doesn't have fantastic facilities and in many cases has an incredibly good restaurant as well. I would, this is what I did when I first came to the country 32 years ago. I drove, and when I saw a sign saying a tasting between 10 and 5, I drove in. You may discover a wine you've never tasted before. You will always have fun. I would suggest you have a designated driver, because after three or four tastings, you know, you shouldn't be fit to drive. But it's a wonderful day out, and a lot of estates, as you know, that do a stunning lunch. I mean, I'm thinking of Mike Ratcliffe at Warwick. I mean, a wonderful, wonderful day you can have there. And, of course, these guys have got lots of land. They've got gorgeous buildings. They've very often got fantastic art collections. They've got little shops there as part of the whole thing. It's a stunning experience. I mean, I think for any tourist coming out from Europe, it's mind-boggling. We also, I'd like to say, and I've hogged a lot of time, we have the best-looking winelands in the world, bar none, I would say.
Malcolm, is this something you would recommend? Not, I mean, not just to an overseas visitor, because, after all, with the Rand in a bit of trouble at the moment, we South Africans find it a bit difficult to live well outside our country. We can have a bloody good time down in the Cape, can't we?
Well, I think that's one of the things I enjoy doing is whenever I go down to the Cape, I'll set aside at least 2 days to make the trek up to Stellenbosch from the beach and the various wine estates. And I always like to try one I've never tried before. So I haven't run out for yet, and I don't think I'll run out for the next few holidays at the very least. But it's always nice to find something new, and as has been said earlier, you can discover some new wines that you'll enjoy.
And Michael, the maybe an idiot's question, but then I'm very good at idiot's questions for some reason. What's the difference between a bog standard South African wine and an estate wine?
Look, I think an estate wine, theoretically, although I believe that the estate thing has been watered down considerably over the last 20 or so years. An estate wine is a wine that is produced from grapes that are grown on the particular farm, like Kaapzicht, for argument's sake, in the Bottleray Hills. All the wines they produce are made from grapes which they grow themselves. So I think that you've got a bit of a feeling of sort of microclimatic condition. You've got, we know our vineyards, we know our cellar, we're doing the very best we can. But today, with people selling grapes left, right, and center, and viticulturists looking after vineyards for you, you can get great, great quality grapes on your farm just as easily. And I look forward to the day when the Estate Producers Association, which there used to be Cape Wine Estate Producers Association, I look forward to the day when they get their act together and can pull the whole thing together so people will actually understand what an estate wine is.
David, any views?
Yeah, I think, John, the important thing is what's in the bottle. And if you're buying in grapes from, let's say, up the West Coast, and you're making exceptionally good wine from it, I really don't have a problem with that at all.
I don't either.
You know, I think the whole estate thing got actually a bit anal. There are some guys experimenting, doing all sorts of exciting things, and it's really what's in the bottle.
And Malcolm, do you get in a state about an estate?
No, I'm a total amateur, and so I just enjoy what I enjoy. And when I put it in the glass and I enjoy it with a meal that I'm having, that's good enough for me.
Well, many thanks to our tasters this evening. We tried the Lanzkron Shiraz 2011, and after this recording is over, no doubt we will finish the Lanzkron Shiraz 2011. Many thanks down in the Cape to Michael Olivier, our food and wine guru. Michael, great to chat to you again.
John, thank you so much for having me.
And David, we've had you on 3 recordings in a row of this podcast, but obviously we have to enjoy you while we can before we lose you to the Cape. Many thanks for your time.
Well, cheers, John.
Cheers, David. And finally, to Malcolm McDonald, not only our technical engineer and guru on all things electronic, but also a very seasoned taster in his own right. Malcolm, great to see you again this evening.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I've really thoroughly enjoyed the tasting.
And from me, John Fraser, many thanks for joining us on Divine Intervention. We'll be back in a week.